Chapter 8. The Inner Character. A character's public and personal personae combine to form his characterization, the outer facade of who he seems to be. His private and hidden selves generate his true character, the inner person he is in fact. When we first encounter a character, we instinctively peer past the surface of characterization into his depths, seeking an answer to the question we always ask whenever we meet someone new: who is this person really? As the character takes action in the face of conflict, answers arrive. What a character chooses to do in his lightest moments expresses little because they cost him little. But at his darkest, when he's up against powerful negative forces, when risks are greatest, his actions reveal the truth. Who is he? Honest or a liar? Loving or cruel? Generous or selfish? Strong or weak? Compulsive or cool, good or evil? Will he help or hinder? Will he comfort or punish? Will he give his life or take a life? What is his true character? The character, of course, never asks these questions of himself. He may speculate about what other people think of him. He may wonder what goes on in his subconscious, but only his author knows all. He created him. He knows his social and personal personae, plus every tactic of self-deception the character uses to hide from what he cannot face in himself. To answer the question, who is he? The writer merges his character's inner world of conscious thought with his hidden subconscious drives. Eventually, after much trial, error, and improvisation, the two selves fuse into an irreducible true character. Let's look at the motivational forces that drive these complex characters. Motivation, putting character into action. Why do people do the things they do must be every psychologist's dying thought. Motivation is the least understood term in the writer's vocabulary and a conundrum for psychologists as well. When researchers ask their subjects why they do what they do, back come rationalizations, not insights. The whys of character action run much deeper than alibis. So, let's first trace their sources. Do the forces that drive human beings press from behind in the past or pull from ahead in the future? In my view, motives and desires form two very different energies. Motivations plant their footings in a character's past and push from behind, while desires anchor the future and entice a character toward what's yet to come. Scientific theories about what pushes from the past divide into two groups: drives rooted in genes versus pressures wrought by social forces. Inside-out motivations. Every human being is born with a collection of drives for survival, love, meaning, and more. These hungers are subconscious and unfocused. Like winds billowing a ship's sails, they push from behind and urge a character forward. A motivation, therefore, is an unsated appetite. When there's nothing to eat, man does indeed live by bread alone. But once fed, his higher internal motivations emerge, and when these are satisfied, newer, still higher drives arise. And so on, in a never-ending hunger for something greater. A human being is a perpetually wanting animal. I'm about to read you a dozen inner motivations in human nature, ranked from primal to elevated. Review this checklist to see if, when, and how they drive your character. 1. Immortality. Death, according to Ernest Becker, is life's most powerful motivator. Knowing that we must die inspires the wish to leave behind something of value to symbolize, like a gravestone, that we were here. Indeed, the dread of death motivates humanity to build monuments to itself. Cities and their skyscrapers, religions and their sanctuaries, universities and their libraries, and, most immortally, works of art. The most lasting expression of our Ice Age ancestors is the paintings they left on the walls of their caves. Ever since the first burial rites over 100,000 years ago, everything human beings have put on this earth is simply one vast immortality project. 2. Survival. The imperative to survive compels all living things toward what they perceive as positive. This is why mousetraps work. The human sense of what's positive, however, hinges on complex subjectivities. If a human being views an action as necessary for survival, but at the same time immoral, he will, after some hesitation, ultimately act to survive. Moral, immoral, good, evil, right, wrong, and survival, extinction are four very different sets of values. The first three pairs express the ideal. The last reflects the real. From a character's point of view, any action that preserves his genes in himself, his family, his tribe, is positive. This is why wars work. 3. Balance. A tiny scale in the brain weighs the positive versus negative charges around it, seeking balance. Radical imbalance threatens survival and takes sanity for a ride, so the mind naturally craves sovereignty over its existence. When, for example, a crime tilts justice-injustice to the negative, society demands revenge as a positive charge that restores balance. When the three brothers in Ray Donovan murder the priest who molested them, all breathe a sigh of relief. Justice done, their lives finally rest in balance. 4. Pleasure. The craving for pleasure can be irresistible, even if it causes pain in the future. Victims of abuse, haunted by cruel memories, drown their nightmares in fathoms of opiate-induced amnesia, knowing full well that pleasure is temporary, and even greater pain lies ahead. 5. Sex. At the turn of the 20th century, many psychologists based their theories of human behavior on a single cause. The most famous was Sigmund Freud's contention that sexual instincts drive all of life's objectives. 6. Power. Alfred Adler, originator of the inferiority complex, said that desire for power focuses all strivings. No matter where people perch on the social pyramid, they constantly survey those above and below, trying to measure their relative power. 7. Empathy. The hunger to belong creates tribes. With belonging comes the feeling that if one member suffers, all others ache in empathetic harmony. And somehow, that makes people feel better. 8. More. Enough is never enough. Avarice progresses in 3 steps. A. Greed, the craving for more. Human beings are insatiable and eternally disappointed. When a character wants more than he can reasonably expect, he lives in a state of emptiness. Quote, I pay more and more for greater and greater dissatisfactions, unquote, complained Antonia Wolf to Carl Jung in Morris West's novel, The World is Made of Glass. B. Envy. The tortured feeling that someone has something you don't. When a desired thing seems forever out of reach, the urge to gain the thing reverses into an urge to destroy it. If destructiveness fails, the envious character wallows in self-pity. In Shakespeare's The Tragedy of Othello, Iago envies Othello's prowess and prestige, so he destroys him. In Herman Melville's Billy Budd, Claggard envies Billy's beauty and goodness, so he destroys him. C. Jealousy. Envy escalates into jealousy when a rival enters. Jealousy reaches fever pitch when it fears that a beloved prefers a rival. In Amadeus, Salieri sees with envy of Mozart's talent. He pleads with God, why Mozart? Why not me? In a rage, he rips a crucifix off the wall and burns it in a fireplace. Risking damnation, greedy for esteem, riven by jealousy, and desperate for the adoration of Vienna's music patrons, Salieri destroys his young rival, Mozart. 9. Interest. The difference between want to and have to is all the difference in the world. That's why a repetitious job is a shit job, no matter the paycheck, and its only cure is curiosity. The mind prefers doing things for their own sake. It likes tasks that demand skill, jobs done right, problems that need solutions simply because they're problems. This is why the creative process satisfies more than the finished work. Means is the end. 10. Meaning. Viktor Frankl believed that a meaningless life is a life of vertigo, dizzily out of control. When people get what they thought they wanted, money, fame, a C-suite job, they often fall into depression. Achievement ends the struggle that gave their life purpose. The obvious solution would be to search for a new, even deeper purpose, but For many people, one life purpose per lifetime is all they'll ever know. 11. Fulfillment. A self-knowing mind senses its untapped humanity, its mental and emotional potential. The thoughtful character longs to plumb those depths and fulfill his inner promise. 12. Transcendence. Carl Jung believed that the ultimate motivation is a subconscious longing for Faustian supremacy, for godlike knowledge beyond the mind's reach, a metaphysical perfection. These inner drives, in various combinations, often unawares and beyond control, push us toward the future. Like prehistoric man, we are still kind to friends and fierce to enemies. Progress gives us hospitals instead of magicians, nuclear missiles instead of bows and arrows. Science has made us more efficient at either helping people or killing them, but motivation never changes. Outside-in motivations. Now, let's take the reverse point of view and look at motivation from the outside in. A storyteller studies his setting, social institutions, economic, political, religious, to measure their impact on his cast. Although cultural systems influence trends, consider the vast effect of social media, if a writer imposes a theory of mass motivation on a specific character, he risks mistaking conditions for causes. Poverty and wealth, for example, are conditions, not causes. The physical and psychological pains caused by poverty may influence a character to become a spiritual leader, to relieve suffering, or they may influence a violent criminal to add to it. Or he may simply grit his teeth and persevere. Neither poverty nor wealth cause crime directly. Felons inhabit both extremes in more or less equal percentages. So for an external social force, for example, a TV commercial, to motivate a character to act, it must first strike the character's senses. He sees an ad. Then work its way through his subconscious motivators, arousing an appetite, before he finally chooses an action, buying something. Massive social forces certainly influence a cast, but they must work their way through each unique personality, and who knows what will come out the other side. Because a character is educated doesn't mean he's sophisticated. Because he's ignorant doesn't mean he's crude. Because he's a servant doesn't mean he's servile. The same painful events that destroy one character may inspire another, while a third sleeps it off. When a specific character acts in a specific scene, the effects of the surrounding culture become one of a kind and unpredictable. The object of desire. A classically told story opens with its protagonist's life in overall balance, his ups and downs more or less routine. But then something happens. An inciting incident caused either by random chance or someone's decision, throws the protagonist's life radically out of balance. An inciting incident could pivot a protagonist's life sharply to the positive. Romeo, for example, falls for Juliet, or darkly to the negative. Hamlet, for example, discovers his father's murder. In either case, when life goes out of kilter, A subconscious desire for a stable life stirs into consciousness. This drive for equilibrium becomes a character's super objective. Sensing that life has swung out of control, the protagonist imagines a solution in the form of a life change that's expressed either situationally, committed love, or physically, a dead villain. That which would bring about a positive change, we call the object of desire. The protagonist feels that if he could secure this, his life would swing back on an even keel. Now that he knows what he wants, he's able to act. His super objective to restore life's balance and his pursuit of his object of desire points him toward his story's final crisis and climax. In every story, the protagonist's super objective directs his action toward a unique object of desire. The action genre, for example, often aims at something you could hold in your hands. In Jaws, a dead shark. The education plot's object of desire is usually something you could hold in your mind. In Ralph Ellison's novel, Invisible Man, the protagonist searches for an identity, an answer to the question, who am I? Therefore, a motivation, for example, the lust for power, is an unfocused subconscious latency until an inciting incident spurs it to life and focuses it on a desire. By causing the need for a balanced future, the inciting incident puts motivation into action and forms the object of desire that pulls the protagonist through his story-long trek. Some examples? In tragic plots, such as the tragedy of Romeo and Juliet, Romeo's aroused libido, motivation number 5, fixates on a stimulus, the exquisite Juliet, that inspires action, his climbing of a balcony, in pursuit of the protagonist's ultimate object of desire, Juliet, as his wife. In action plots, such as Vikings, a young warrior tastes victory for the first time, and this inciting incident unites motivations number 7 and 8, arousing his appetite to rule. The throne, his glittering object of desire, draws him toward the future. In degeneration plots such as A Confederacy of Dunces by John Kennedy Toole, The Tin Drum by Günter Grass, Perfume by Patrick Susskind, and The Beauty Queen of Linane by Martin McDonagh, protagonists suffer psychic traumas that ignite subconscious motivations number 1, 2, and 3. Their objects of desire call for bizarre, even murderous deeds until they end either suicidal or insane or both. True character through choices. How does a writer express a character's inner nature? Not by characterization. In fact, the more fascinating a character's outer behavior, the more the reader audience wants to discover his true inner counterpoints. Jack, for example, seems tough, but where's his soft spot? Not what by others say about him. What one character believes about another may or may not be true, but that it's said and by whom may set up future revelations. Not by what a character says about himself. Audiences and readers listen to a character's confessions or braggings with high skepticism, they know that people are as self-deceived as self-aware. Instead, they look for events to build pressure and expose true character in the only way they trust, choices. A human being is the choices he makes over a lifetime. From amoebas to apes, all earthly critters obey nature's first law, choose life. Nature compels every living thing to preserve its genes by acting toward the positive as it sees the positive. What is a violent death to a gazelle is lunch to a lion. Nature's bias of life over death channels all human choice toward the positive, meaning anything that enhances life, and away from the negative, meaning anything that hints of death. As Socrates taught, no one willingly does what he believes to be wrong. Instead, everyone acts toward a perceived positive. In such matters, subjectivity is all. When survival demands it, the mind simply redefines immorality into virtue. If the reader audience understands a character's point of view and sees him confront a simple positive-negative choice, happiness versus misery, right versus wrong, they know in advance, probably before the character himself knows, how he will choose. He will reject the negative and choose what he perceives is the positive. The core self always does. It's the first law. Therefore, clear choices between negative and positive charges of the same thing, poverty versus wealth, ignorance versus wisdom, ugliness versus beauty, are all trivial. True character through dilemma. The only dramatically compelling and character-revealing decision is a choice between two things of more or less equal value. These dilemmas come in two varieties, positive and negative. A positive dilemma confronts a character with two equally desirable but irreconcilable possibilities. He wants both, but circumstances force him to choose only one. For example, in the classic dilemma of romantic comedy, a woman finds herself caught between a man who's loving, devoted, and generous, but boring, versus another who's passionate, brilliant, and fascinating, but certain to break her heart. A negative dilemma confronts a character with two equally undesirable possibilities. He wants neither, but circumstances force him to choose one of two evils. For example, the classic marriage drama. If a woman doesn't marry the man her family favors, they will disown her. But if she does marry her family's pick, she will suffer a lifetime of boredom. Clear choices are easily made and without jeopardy, but dilemma puts a character under pressure and at risk. A clear choice reveals little or nothing the reader audience doesn't already know. A decision in dilemma sends alternative choices running through a character's imagination. As he struggles to make his choice, the push and pull of possibilities propels the reader audience's curiosity toward the story's climax. What will he finally do? Either way he chooses, his action under pressure will reveal his true character. Let me give you three examples. In No Country for Old Men, the Coen brothers' film adaptation of the Cormac McCarthy novel, Llewellyn Moss risks his life for $2.4 million in stolen drug money. He chooses the money and pays for it with the lives of both himself and his wife. In Sweat, a play by Lynn Nottage, Cynthia must choose between going on strike with her lifelong working-class pals versus her new job in low-level management. She chooses her job and sacrifices her friendships. In Less, a novel by Andrew Sean Greer, Arthur Less faces this dilemma: struggling for full creative achievement and the painful sacrifices that demands, versus accepting less and gaining the pleasures of an easier life. He chooses the latter. True character through antagonism. When a character takes action in a high-risk dilemma, he inevitably provokes forces of antagonism in his world. To overcome these obstacles, he must continually improvise anew. His choices are sometimes instinctive, sometimes deliberate, but always under pressure. He stands to lose in order to gain. The greater this risk-filled pressure, the deeper and truer the choice to who, at heart, he is. As further events impact his life, his evolving nature chooses to conform or rebel, to accept or reject his previous beliefs and values. No deeply felt experience is neutral. No choice is impartial. No action is impersonal. Thus, by choice and action, he either civilizes or de-civilizes himself. He either grows as a human being or shrivels. Degrees of pressure, therefore, measure the depth and quality of true character. How, for example, do we know for certain whether a character is honest or dishonest? When nothing is at risk, pressure is light, and therefore telling the truth, painless. But when everything, even life itself, is at stake, when consequences stretch to the limits of human endurance, then excruciating pressure builds around the choice to tell the truth or lie. Whichever way the character acts, his choice delivers a profound insight into his core self. Once a character chooses a tactic, he hands the doing of the deed to his agent self, who then takes on one of his personal or social personae. When not directing the show, the core self spends the day like a documentary film crew, watching, listening, and recording every interesting thing his outer selves do. Afterward, the core self usually wishes he had done things a bit better. When creating a complex character, imagine his values along spectra that run from extreme positives, love, courage, hope, to extreme negatives, hate, cowardice, despair. For example, if his life is in danger, where does he stand on the courage-cowardice spectrum? Complex characters feel some of both. If his life has lost meaning, how does he see his future along the hope-despair spectrum? If he's in an intimate relationship, is he capable of love? Where along the love-hate spectrum would you place him? Consider the value honesty-dishonesty. A character may appear truthful, Others may say he is. He may insist he is. But how will a reader audience know for certain whether he's an honest man or a liar or morally flexible? If he has nothing to lose and chooses to tell the truth, his honesty seems trivial because it's risk-free. But if he's under grave threat and he chooses to tell the truth when a lie would save his life, his depth of honesty seems profound. If, on the other hand, the character is a priest who, under threat, refuses to deny his faith, his honesty may seem less impressive because his sacred vows make his choice less free. The interplay between choice and self gives the writer three grand principles to guide the work. 1. When a character at risk and under pressure pursues desire, his choices of action express his true character. 2. The greater the risk and pressure, the deeper and truer the choice. 3. The freer the choice, the even deeper and truer the choice to the character's identity. Consider four tragic roles: Othello, Lear, Macbeth, and Hamlet. Brilliant characters, all, but Hamlet is the most complex. Why? Choices. Othello's jealousy blinds him. Lear's daughters make decisions for him, and the witch's prophecies funnel Macbeth to his destiny. Hamlet's choices are freer and more numerous. He might kill himself or not, revenge himself or not, love Ophelia or not, kill Polonius or not, find life meaningless or meaningful, stay sane or go crazy, all because of his unlimited freedom to choose. Therefore, choice and character development relate this way. If a character makes only a few risk-free choices around a single value, he stays shallow and monodimensional. But if a character makes numerous risk-taking choices in the face of various values, he becomes complex and thus involves the reader deeply in his inner life. For example, in the opening episodes of Succession, the autocratic Logan Roy, played by Brian Cox, dominates his coke-abusing son, Kendall, played by Jeremy Strong, giving him few, if any, choices. Kendall's reactions make him seem weak, shallow, petty. But once he breaks free from his father and follows his own dangerous choices, his character gains heft and complexity and wins our empathy. True character and emotion. When a character takes an action and his world reacts with antagonism, the charge of value at stake in the scene undergoes change. If a value charge moves from negative to positive, the character experiences an overall positive emotion. And the reverse. If a value's charge swings from positive to negative, his experience turns overall negative. Emotion, as noted in Chapter 7, is the side effect of change. A stimulus, such as good or bad news, causes glands to open and flood the bloodstream with a chemical cocktail that instills a particular emotion. A beautiful sight floods the brain with dopamine and serotonin, triggering a rush of pleasure. A grotesque image sends chemicals that affect the amygdala and insular cortex, causing woozy pains of disgust. Soon, however, the limbic system produces counterchemicals to quiet and dispel emotions, returning the mind and body to a state of equilibrium. The intense experiences of pleasure and pain peak and then recede. Pleasure and pain can be subdivided into various tones or qualities, although there is no scientific agreement on how many. Traditional psychology names just six: joy, fear, anger, sadness, disgust, and surprise. Notice that the only clearly positive emotion here is joy. To turn these states into tools for the writer, I've expanded the list by pairing them into six oppositions that give the writer a palette of 12 emotions: love-hate, amity-anger, joy-grief, surprise-shock, pleasure-disgust, courage-fear. The words emotion and feeling are often used interchangeably, but in my thinking, they differ greatly by the quality of their impact. Emotion hits with an intense suddenness, peaks in power, then in time fades away. A feeling comes over you more slowly, sits in the background of experience, and lasts for long periods of time. Joy is an emotion. Happiness is a feeling. Grief is an emotion. Sadness is a feeling. You know how it goes. One morning, you wake up feeling great and spend the whole day behind a smile. No particular reason for this. You're just at the optimistic pitch of your inner teeter-totter. Or you spend a day with a cloud over your head. Again, for no good reason, you just hit your cynical bottom. Feelings: pride of achievement versus shame of failure. Hope for a bright future versus a premonition of disaster. A light heart versus a grumpy soul. Trust of a loved one versus suspicions of infidelity. All these often color a personality long after the original stimulus is forgotten, shaping a role's characterization over a lifetime. From turning point to turning point, change in the dynamic charge of a life value puts a character through one of the 12 emotions listed above. In romantic comedy, for example, falling in love could fill a grieving character with joy, while losing love could inflict a joyful character with grief. But when writing a scene, knowing the underlying emotion is only a starting point. An emotion in its pure state, strikes a character like a blunt instrument. In life, the 12 prime passions range across an infinite variety of qualities and subtle intensities. What, therefore, determines which particular shade of emotion a character expresses in any particular scene? Answer: characterization. The mood, feeling, tone, and texture that emanates from a distinctive personality shapes a primal emotion into a genuinely original performance. Joy in one character might be expressed with a high-stepping song and dance routine, while another only smiles around the edges of his eyes. True character and reactions. Reality limits the number of basic actions a human being can take. A person could choose to educate himself or live in ignorance, marry or live alone, work or laze, eat smart or pig out, face life or hide from it, and so on down a rather short list. On the other hand, the variety of moment-to-moment reactions a person may have to any action seems infinite. When a character struggles to educate himself, for example, his possible reactions to the trials of learning are as different and as many as there are for all the students in all schools everywhere. The same is true of romance, work, health, and every other major aspect of life. The choices a character makes when negative forces block his path express his core identity, but the way he reacts makes him one of a kind. In Casablanca, Rick Blaine, played by Humphrey Bogart, asks Victor Laszlo, played by Paul Honreid, why he keeps risking his life for the anti-fascist cause. Laszlo: we might as well question why we breathe. We stop breathing, we'll die. We stop fighting our enemies, the world will die. Rick says, what of it? Then it'll be out of its misery. Laszlo's elegant declaration is an answer any idealist might give, but Rick's reaction, his belief that the death of civilization would be an act of mercy, is character-specific. Rick's choices, unique to him alone, set him apart from every version of the American antihero before and since. Let this principle guide your character work. Choices of action under pressure express true character. But detailed, never-seen-before reactions make a characterization distinctive and intriguing. True character and free will. A writer's imagination is the sole source of every decision a character makes and every action he takes. A character's choices are, in fact, his author's choices. But from the point of view of audiences and readers, the opposite seems true. In a fictional world, independent characters lead independent lives, acting of their own free will. So, in both realms, the as-is and the as-if, how free is human choice? The Matrix explores this question as its protagonist, Neo, Keanu Reeves, discovers that what he experiences as reality is in fact an induced delusion known as the Matrix. This false world was created by an all-powerful AI to deceive enslaved human beings into thinking they are free, while the AI uses their bodies as biological batteries to run its machines. Neo fights to gain the willpower he needs to defeat AI's agents and break free from the Matrix. The free will versus determinism debate is eons old. But with the recent rise of neuroscience and quantum theory, ancient arguments have found new intensity. One side insists that free will is a delusion and that all choice is caused by forces outside human control. Others believe the will operates free of any cause, external or internal. This dispute has influenced writers of both speculative and realistic fiction. The side you favor shapes the stories you tell and the casts that populate them. Against free will. Free will deniers argue that for the will to be free, choice must be uncaused. An uncaused decision has no connection to anything in the past and is therefore utterly spontaneous. But of course, as we know, in the physical universe, all actions, human or cosmic, are caused. Even the Big Bang had its cause, albeit as yet unknown. Denier logic argues that because an uncaused cause is a non sequitur, the human choice cannot be free. 4. Free will. In Fawlty Towers, Basil's car breaks down. After making dire threats to it, he counts to 3, gives his car one last chance, then shouts, "I've warned you. I laid it on the line to you time and time again. Right, I'm going to give you a damn good thrashing." He rips a branch from a nearby tree and beats the paint off the fenders. Basil blames the car. We blame Basil. Suppose, however, that like the car, Basil had no choice. Suppose the fault is a schizophrenic flaw in his brain chemistry, or a defect in his upbringing. If so, do we blame his parents? But if his parents have no free will, how do we condemn them? We don't. Fault-finding chases blame after blame into an infinite regress, so we choose to believe that Basil abused his car of his own free will. Believing we don't have free will is not the same as believing we don't make choices. No matter how our genes and personal history combine to influence our mind, our choices seem real. We sense that deep inside of us, our neural processes select actions based on a sense of probable consequences, what we think will happen when we take an action. We merge our sum total of living experience with an immediate situation, imagine an outcome, then make a choice. Without belief in choice, we could not hold ourselves responsible for anything we did. Law would evaporate, personal binds unravel, and the purge become a 24/365 reality. If we have no free will, how can we change, cut, add, merge, or rework ourselves into someone we've never been before? If the human will is not free, at least to some degree, how are creativity and change possible? If all choice is determined by the past, how does anything new ever find its way into the world? If free will didn't exist, nothing unnecessary would exist. Yet history is littered with things human beings made just for the fun of it. Like a child making up a game out of things he finds around the house, an artist creates by inventing something that never existed out of what already exists. Childhood play is the essence of free choice, and mature art is its fullest expression. As we noted earlier, any story you create argues both for and against free will. When a story begins, and we look into its unknown future, virtually everything and anything seems possible. But at climax, now that we know the protagonist's psychology in depth, now that we see the full array of social, personal, and physical forces that surround him, we realize that the choices he made were the only choices he could and would have made. The reactions he got from his world were the only reactions his world could and would have given him. The path he took was the only path he could have taken. Character choices seem free and unpredictable when seen from the inciting incident and looking toward the story's climax, but inevitable and fated when looking back from the climax to the inciting incident. Free will in one direction, retroactive determinism in the other. Our sense of free will may be a delusion that arises out of ignorance of its causes, but if so, then it's our delusion, and we have no choice but to embrace it. When your characters make choices, they face four possible pathways to a decision, two beyond their control, and two within their free will choices. 1. Circumstances push a character's life one way or another and determine the choice, for better or worse, whether he likes it or not. 2. The subconscious self makes choices the core self never realizes or rationalizes away. 3. The character quickly considers what to do. As choices come to mind, one takes hold, and he makes an instinctive decision. 4. The character slowly considers his choices, makes lists of pros and cons, followed by a concatenation of all possible consequences and a judicious weighing of their effects. He finally makes his choice. This rational mode usually precedes a character's greatest mistakes in life. Ultimately, as author, all choices are yours.